Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Happy Monday. It is a open forum this hour. What do you want to talk about in the news? What's in the headlines that interests you? I mentioned 1 in 9 prisoners in the U.S. are serving a life term, 4 times as many as 30 years ago. Mentioned that at the top of the hour. Do you feel safer? Do you feel safe? Is the world a safer place because of this or not? What do you make of that? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Reuters produced that report out of Miami. There is the Sentencing Project, the Washington-based research group, research and advocacy group, has long pushed for criminal justice reforms, and in its report said that nearly 160,000 people were serving life sentences in 2012, or 10.6% of the 1.5 million inmates being held in state and federal prisons. Now, some people might be more interested in that 1.5 million number to begin with. Life sentences have increased steadily over the years, beginning with the first documented national census of the population in 1984, the report said, noting that the total was up nearly 12% since 2008. What do you make of sentencing in the United States? 1 out of 9 U.S. prisoners is sentenced to life in prison. Now, for a lot of them, it doesn't necessarily mean they'll spend the entire rest of their life in prison. But increasingly, because of a lot of the sentencing reforms that were pushed through in the late 80s, early 90s, truth in sentencing laws and so forth is what they were referred to. A lot of people are serving the rest of their life or are being forced to serve out entire sentences instead of being given time off for good behavior or that sort of thing. So, give us a call. Tell us what you think. The budget. Once again, we are headed to the brink. We are becoming quite the nation of brinksmen when it comes to the spending in Washington. This week, Republicans will attempt to dismantle. Last week, attempted to dismantle President Obama's health care law. They were using 2 budget deadlines that threaten a government shutdown and a national default as their leverage. They said it provided the best opportunity to extract concessions on the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Open enrollment begins, of course, on October 1st, the same day the federal government would shut down if Congress can't agree to a stopgap spending measure. The second deadline arrives in mid-October when the government hits its borrowing limit. What do you make of that? I think this is possibly just going to the way it's going to work from now on. What do you make of the fiscal cliff this time around? 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. It's an open forum on All Sides today. There are no calls up right now. So if you think that there are a bunch of calls up and you'd have to wait in line, you could just pick up the phone right now and give us a jingle, and we'll see what you want to talk about, what's in the headlines today. Or in the last few days, you can check out our Facebook page or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Another issue that kind of struck me, proposed driving rules would add restrictions for teens, including no friends in the car. This interests me because I think of a few examples of a couple kids I know that if the kid had been alone in the car, they would have gotten lost. They actually needed somebody in the car with them to navigate. If a child's in the car by themselves, maybe they're not really good at directions yet, then they have to use their GPS and drive at the same time. I don't know. What do you think of that? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Would it have affected you or your child in learning to drive in those early days if they had been banned from having anyone in the car with them? I don't know if it includes family or not, but definitely no friends in the car. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The Columbus Dispatch reported on Sunday that regardless of their socioeconomic background, Black students in Ohio continue to lag far behind their white peers in school. That's according to a Dispatch analysis of data from state standardized exams. On more than two dozen state tests given to students in K through high school last year, the average passage rate among Black students was 64%. On average, 87% of white students passed. What do you make of that? 614-292-8513 or email us for this open forum at allsides@wosu.org. Beth in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. I could talk about the fiscal crisis, but I'm not.
Okay. You want to?
So I'm going to talk about the teen drivers.
Okay.
I skimmed over the article as well. I think it's well-meaning, but I also think it's really, really hard on kids because I grew up in a primarily car town where there weren't buses. Or a lot of buses, and the schedules were wonky. And I mean, I wouldn't have been able to go to see any shows I would have wanted to see under this rule because I wouldn't be able to carpool. And plus, the cutoff limit of when you're supposed to be driving around. You know, you go to see a show in Cleveland or someplace, and then you come back, and the show starts at like 8, and come back with your friends. I don't know. Don't the cops have something better to do?
Well, I'll tell you what. I couldn't have gone, if I was a teen, I couldn't have gone to the high school play that I went to on Saturday night. We live 5 minutes from the school, and we still didn't get home until almost 10:30.
Right. And how are you not going to go without your friends? I mean, it doesn't, I understand the no texting and driving. I understand the logic behind it, but it just seems like, you know, it sends the message that teenagers can't be trusted.
Well, you know, they're saying distractions abound. Cell phones, friends, other drivers, and night driving. That's what they're saying. They could save new drivers from dangerous driving scenarios as they learn the ways of the road. Of course, teenagers think that that's unfair. And as I said before, I can think of a few kids who would have been might still be driving around Columbus if they didn't have a friend with them to help them navigate.
Well, I agree with that too. But I mean, there has to be some kind of a medium between the cutoff time and for when they're allowed to drive. I mean, I'm a distracted driver and I'm an adult. You know, I've got phones. I've got, you know, I mean, if that's the case, why put a radio in? Forget the phone, just don't put a radio in.
The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety recommends an 8 p.m. driving curfew and no other teens in the car. It also says teens should not be licensed until they are 17 and should have 65 supervised practice hours behind the wheel. More states are moving closer to those standards, the Insurance Institute says. Iowa, Maine, Texas, Vermont, and Virginia all tightened teen drivers' restrictions this year, including changing passenger laws from a secondary to a primary offense.
Well, Texas, I find hard to believe because I grew up in Texas. And as soon as you were allowed to drive, I can't tell you how many of my friends pleaded the hardship clause so they could get their license at 14.
I can see that you don't want a pile of teens in the car.
Right.
I saw that. But just one other. Well, anyways, Beth, thanks a lot for calling.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Tina in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, is it Tina?
Yep.
Oh, hi, good morning.
Hi,
I'm
Tina.
Sorry, I didn't.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
I'm calling in regards to, I think it was your third question.
The racial gap in education testing. What do you make of that?
Well, number one, I don't think it's surprising at all. I mean, if you look at historically, Black people, let's say going back to the 30s and the 40s, when we went to school, you know, we had teachers that looked like us. Mm. that we could relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look really in at the public schools, I'm talking specifically about the Columbus public schools, very few black males. These kids, black kids, they don't have any strong black males that they can identify with. And, you know, I'm not trying to be funny, but, you know, when you have predominantly white teachers teaching black children,
mm-hmm.
and they go back to the suburbs with their families and kids, well, they know, well, would you want your kids to be in competition with kids that you have trained to be successful?
Wait,
no,
but you don't think that they actually don't teach
sure
as well?
Sure I do.
You
sure
do.
I do,
okay.
Sure, I have to. I have to. You know what, I remember when, I'm switching gears right now, Michael Coleman was president of city council,
mm-hmm.
and I have one child, and it was an open forum somewhere, and I went and I said, you know what, the kids aren't learning. And he said, well, you got to be patient. You got to give us time. My kid is 32 years old. My husband died. I took my son out of Yorktown, and I sent him to private school myself.
Mm-hmm.
I worked three jobs so he could get a good education.
Mm-hmm.
How long, matter of fact, my son went to school with Michael Coleman's kids.
Mm-hmm.
How long are we supposed to wait?
Mm-hmm.
So do I feel as though this wasn't by design? Of course it was.
Hmm.
Because how could it be year after year after year, black kids are coming in under par?
And it doesn't matter what socioeconomic. This is happening in the suburbs as well as the inner city districts.
But not to the extent that is happening in the inner city schools.
Okay.
And I'm going to sit back and I want to hear what your listeners say.
Yeah.
I remember Bill Moss, he investigated, what was that, $20 million missing from the treasurer or the comptroller, and he jumped ship, never was prosecuted. That was money for our kids.
Okay.
Now they have this new levy, and, they want us to get on board and sponsor the levy. Why?
Okay.
Thank you, Ann.
You're
thank
welcome.
Thank you for listening.
Tina, thank you for calling. Take care. We have an open forum this hour, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Give us a call. We're going to take a break right now and be back with our open forum. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about what's in the headlines today. Give us a call if you want to talk about something in the news, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Another word for it or another phrase for it is an open forum. Rachel in Granville, you wanted to talk about the teen driving restrictions. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, the only thing I really that strikes me odd about the teen driving restriction is that we continually tell our kids that there's safety in numbers.
Hmm.
And I think sending our teenage girls out in their car alone is dangerous. I think you're better off to have a couple of girlfriends with you. And I would just pose that as the kind of the devil's advocate argument that these kids are actually better off with their buddies with them than completely on their own.
You want to meet at the mall, so you're going to have four cars driving to the mall instead of one or two.
Right, and when you leave the mall at night or whatever time it is and you're walking to your car alone because you drove alone, then, you know, are you just setting these kids up for failure when maybe they're actually more successful because they're in a group?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I'm thinking about the gasoline and, you know, just the environment and so forth.
Yeah, and you know, we talk out of one side of our mouths, you know, be green, be eco-conscious, carpool, save hydrocarbons. But then here, we don't extrapolate that logic into other policies.
Right. That's interesting. Rachel, thanks a lot. That's a very interesting observation as far as we tell people safety in numbers and then tell them to go out and drive by themselves. But you understand the logic behind you don't want the car filled with kids either.
Oh, I completely understand. I have a 14-year-old son, and we're already having the conversation about what behavior is acceptable and what not. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, he's still kind of afraid of his dad, so he's not willing to completely buck us. But yeah, I understand that the challenges. But having a car behave recklessly with the radio on really loud and a bunch of hyperactive kids in it is that for a police officer to observe that is its own situation. He has the right to pull them over for poor driving on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have four girls in a car and they're driving well and they're behaving well, then I don't see why you would restrict that.
Okay. All right, Rachel, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
We have an open forum. We're talking about stories that are in the news, issues that are in the news these days. The county is looking. 614-292-8513. The county may raise taxes. Franklin County commissioners have said that the difference between raising this county sales tax by a quarter cent on the dollar and a half cent hinges on whether they want to pay cash for a new $150 million jail and $50 million morgue. On Thursday, they said that they would support the higher tax when they voted on it tomorrow. Greg in Columbus, that's what you wanted to talk about. Welcome.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm actually running for Columbus City Council, and I was speaking to the county commissioners at their first hearing, and I spoke out against the sales tax increase. Look, the state just increased the sales tax as part of a comprehensive tax package, but the real problem we're having right now is Franklin County and Central Ohio is doing well economically, better than the state as a whole, and it doesn't seem like this would be the time we would want to continue to raise taxes across the board on so many different areas. I mean, we have an increased income tax from a few years ago in the city of Columbus. We have a significant property tax that's on the ballot this year for the Columbus City Schools, whatever your thoughts are on that subject. And you just had a quarter of a percent increase, and now you're talking about up to a half a percent increase on the sales tax to be the second highest county combined sales tax, I believe, behind only Cuyahoga County in the entire state. We have a real problem where we are pancaking on top of each other, tax after tax after tax. It's not just one tax that's the problem. It's the cumulative effect of all of them. And I think a lot of people should be asking some real hard questions. Do we really need the $150 million county jail?
Do we? What do you make of that? Do we? It's a growing county. It's growing in population, and we're growing in crimes.
What is the cost of retrofitting or doing some modifications to the existing structure? What's the cost of having perhaps a satellite location? I mean, are these questions perhaps they've been looked at? But here's the real issue. There's a lot of questions about renovation projects and whether or not we've done things appropriately in terms of bidding out to get the best cost on contracting. I mean, the Dispatch ran a series of stories earlier this year where the non-union firms on the Hall of Justice renovation, the non-union firms were basically saying they didn't even bother to bid because of the way that the bid out was constructed so that they wouldn't even bother. That begs the question of whether or not we're paying inflated costs on some of the construction, which then, of course, begs the question as to what is exactly going to happen. Those are some pretty tough questions, I think, that have yet to be fully vetted and answered. And yet most people, I would submit, in this county probably didn't even know that they were about to pay another half a percent potentially in sales tax.
You mean from the state?
Some people may be aware and wonder, well, why do we just see the quarter percent income tax? But I bet very few realize, I mean, I know it's been in the Dispatch, but there hasn't been a whole lot of attention paid to the fact that the commissioners are talking about raising the sales tax. And I think a lot of people are going to be quite surprised when they find out that they're paying more on every single item because this isn't exactly been shouted for the rooftops. I mean, it's not been hidden, but it's not been shouted for the rooftops and particularly promoted all that well either.
So you want them to go back to the drawing board and consider, first of all, whether we need the jail, whether we need the new morgue, whether there's some other way to pay for it or configure it and so forth.
Yes, I think we should be very serious about that, and we should be continue to be, you know, they say that they're being fiscally conservative. They should continue to be fiscally conservative and you know, really look with a microscope at every potential area that they can save, not just in the construction area, but across the board.
Okay.
I know that they've gotten a lot of credit for being, quote-unquote, fiscally conservative, but it's nice to bandy that phrase around when you're about to raise sales tax and put on close to $200 million worth of new construction between the morgue and the new jail house. So I think, you know, we need to be very careful, especially on top of all the other taxes that we're saying, and depending on what happens with the Columbus schools. And we all know that even if the levy fails this time around, that's not going to be the end of the story. It never is. They will keep coming back until they get something passed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have property taxes increasing in the city of Columbus, which makes up a significant portion, obviously, of the Franklin County. So,
well,
you know, again, what are we doing? How are we going to contain our costs? When are we going to see all the various reforms to keep things in line?
All right. Greg, thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks.
Take care. Brad, you're a teacher in Columbus?
Yes, uh-huh.
Hi, welcome to the show. You wanted to respond to the comment we had earlier, I think from Tina.
Right. I'm a teacher with Columbus City Schools, and I'm a white male. Unfortunately, there's a dearth of African-American male teachers. I agree they should be in the schools, and perhaps a solution would be providing greater opportunities for scholarships through the state or in some other way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take my comment.
Well, you're a teacher. Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
I think something that Tina said deserves at least a little another point of view, and that is that teachers in suburbs teach the teachers from suburbs who teach in the inner city districts have a vested interest in not doing such a great job because the kids in the inner city districts are competing against the kids in the suburbs. Do you think teachers do that?
I don't do that. I certainly don't think so. I think we're perhaps more sensitive to the issues because we see the contrast. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you live in the suburbs?
I live in Blacklick.
Okay. Yeah, so, teach in Columbus City Schools.
Right.
So, yeah, you live in the suburbs. I just kind of wondered what you thought about that, because she really believes that is the case.
Well,
it's a plan.
I understand that. I understand that. I do. And a lot of the teachers do, including our principal, who's African-American, live in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
So in a certain respect, I do. It is hard to relate to some of the issues, but we all are sensitive to that because we work with the kids and we talk to the parents and we see what's the situation.
But you don't teach a lesser. You're not a less. You don't give it less. I'm trying to phrase this. You don't teach less as a teacher. You're not a lesser of a teacher because you happen to live in the suburbs and teach in the inner city schools.
Oh, no, I don't consider myself that at all.
Okay. That was her point, is that people who live in the suburbs who happen to teach in the inner city schools don't teach as well because...
Oh, no, I think that's totally, totally false. No, I think we're just as sensitive, if not more so.
Okay. Well, if anyone else has any ideas, Brad, thank you for your call.
I appreciate it.
Take care.
Take your time. Bye.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join our open forum today. We're looking to talk about issues that are in the news, in the headlines these days. 614-292-8513. And let's go back to that sales tax issue with Steve in Columbus. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
The problem is with these open forums, there's about 100 things I'd like to discuss.
I know, but pick one.
I'm going to focus on the new sales tax increase.
Or the proposed new sales tax increase.
Proposed new sales tax increase. And my frustration with it is, it just seems like all the time you go to a restaurant or, to some small business, or contractors are notorious. They don't pay sales tax. They charge you sales tax, yet you go up to pay for your food, and the register is open all morning long, and all they add it up on a calculator, and they tell you your total, and then they make change without putting it on the register, and you know they're not paying that sales tax. Why? I don't understand why there's not more enforcement of that. You know, if you have somebody come build a deck, first thing they say is, oh, could you make that check to Ann Fisher instead of Ann Fisher Builders? And I don't understand why there's not more enforcement of that.
And then people who do that do it because they're not paying sales tax.
Correct. Yet
it's cheaper.
Yet almost without fail, they're charging you sales tax. And as a matter of fact, I called the county commissioner's office and asked them about enforcement of it. And they really couldn't even tell me who to turn to.
Well, I've heard of people saying, if you write it out to me directly, I'll charge you this. But if you write it out to the company, I'll charge you that.
Yes, I've had that exact same thing.
So they're not really charging you as much.
Well, now that's true. But I had a contractor out to upgrade my electrical service mm-hmm. just recently. And his exact words were, well, with Uncle Sam's portion, that's $1,487. Great. When can we start? Right away. Okay. Could you make that check out to Ann Fisher instead of Ann Fisher Electric?
Right, gotcha.
And, I mean, he says to me directly that with Uncle Sam's sales tax, and like if you go into a restaurant, you buy whatever you buy, and mm-hmm. it's $10.50, they get their little calculator out, and they don't charge you $10.50. They charge you $11.87, and then they make change in the drawer. I find it very frustrating.
Well, it's probably a hard thing to, wouldn't you imagine, a hard thing to police?
I would think it would be a low return to enforce. Mm-hmm. You know, if I take all the time to arrest, you know, Tom Jones.
Mm-hmm. Don't well, say Ann Fisher again, for the heaven's sake.
I won't, but you know what I'm saying.
I do.
I'm sure it's a low return. But it's very frustrating because the easiest thing to do is just to come back to the taxpayers again,
okay.
rather than enforce things that are already done.
All right.
I think there's a lot of money left on the table in that mm-hmm. area, and it doesn't seem like anybody gets too excited about it.
It's a good point, Steve. But I think you answered your own question. A low
rate
of probably. Return on enforcement.
Yeah, probably so.
So, that's something to think about, and I thank you for calling us.
Okay, thanks, Ann.
Take care. Bye-bye. Les in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome, Les. You wanted to agree with that comment, I think it's by Tina, about teachers and racism and so forth.
Yes, absolutely. I'm retired. I graduated from college. I raised two daughters. Both graduated from college. And my read on it after, you know, watching the sad, you know, lack of progress, which at first seemed like progress in the Columbus school system, my feeling is I don't think it's deliberate, but I think it's there. I think it's a cultural bias that, you know, it's one of those things like a marketing scam where, you know, you don't realize you're being manipulated, but you are. And I wish I could give a good answer. You know, I grew up in a integrated city, but things aren't any better. In fact, they're worse than they were when I was in high school. And I think some of the problem is the caller, she was upset. But as your kids grow and you're out of the fire, so to speak, your intensity to try and change diminishes, and then it becomes somebody else's problem and somebody else's problem, and then. We get, you know, Dr. Good or Mr. Good sounds like a great guy, but it's the same story every year. And my feeling is I don't have an answer, but I certainly think we need to erase everything we've done so far, start over, and make it the number one issue that we're facing as a society. That's my read.
All right. Well, Les, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and it's a good show. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
We have an open forum this hour, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think of the plan on Tuesday? The Franklin County Board of Commissioners is going to vote on whether or not they'll support a higher tax sales tax. What do you make of that? They want to, I guess, pay cash for a new $150 million jail and $50 million morgue. Do you think that's the right way to spend our money? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there as well if you'd like. We've been talking about the wide racial gaps that persist in education testing. I'm kind of just cribbed from the Dispatch headline from Sunday, September 22nd. Say that even if they come from affluent families or attend highly rated schools, Black students in Ohio continue to lag far behind their white peers in school, according to, that is, a Dispatch analysis of data from state standardized exams. What do you make of that? 614-292-8513. Ruth in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Ruth.
Hello.
Hi, Ruth. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to discuss, or not discuss, just make an observation about that discrepancy in the scores based on what I read in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
The implication that somehow even in affluent schools, the minority Black children lag behind white students, I think could be considered some sort of indictment of Black children in general, or implying an inferiority. I think that a far more valuable correlation to look for is between the family resources and the test scores, not just
the district or
question between Black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only speak from my own experience dealing with youngsters, and which is not in a public school situation, but that in the places where I have encountered youngsters, that it's much more a matter of family resources that provides the correlation between success and failure, or high scores and low scores,
okay,
than the color of the child.
All right. That's an interesting point. It'd be interesting to know if we could break it down to that. Thanks a lot, Ruth, for your call.
Thank you.
We have an open forum this hour. We will continue our conversation with Doug and Caroline and whoever else wants to give us a call at 614-292-8513 when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. We have an open forum this hour. What's in the news? What's in the headlines that you want to talk about? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Hal, has a comment about life sentences. Writes, the major contributor to life sentences without parole is abolition of the death penalty. Prosecutors readily gravitate to this cheaper alternative to a capital trial. Secondly, states like California and more recently Ohio are looking to dump prisoners from state prisons into already overcrowded local jails and push the drive to build publicly unaccountable private jails. We have scarcely let up on the country's drive to incarcerate. One problem is that national jail censuses are only conducted every several years and don't keep up with prison population data. Doug in Powell, you wanted to return to the conversation about teaching and the discrepancy, the racial gap that the Dispatch says persists in education testing. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Thank you. I've been an educator. I retired in 2011 after 45 years. In the last 3 years, I've continued as a contract person and as a substitute. And in all those years, I've never met a teacher who would shortchange a class purposefully. Now, whether that happens accidentally or something, but no teacher is going to go in and be with the kids all day, every day, and not give them the very best that they can give them. It just doesn't make any sense. It can't happen to a person who is caring about children. And you don't go into this business if you don't care about the kids. I think in the last couple of weeks in the dispatch was evidence that the greatest correlation for lack of success in school is economic. Well, that then speaks to the parent involvement. My parents were not wealthy, but they sure valued education. I think the kids who are not succeeding in school have parents who aren't valuing education and making sure their children value education.
Or they're working three jobs.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's not a value thing. It's an economic. Then we get back to that economic piece.
Yeah, my dad worked full time and always had a part time job on the side. I can hardly ever remember Saturdays when he didn't have something he had to do. And a lot of times I got to go with him and do it, too.
Right. Well, you learned a lot then.
Yep.
That way. Well, Doug, thank you for, your 45 years of service. Appreciate that. And thanks for calling.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Melissa in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Hi. Thanks for having me, and thanks for having this conversation.
You're welcome.
Melissa,
could I stop you for just a second? Can you pull your mouth a little bit away from your cell phone? We have a lot of static.
Oh, sorry.
Just pull your mouth away there.
Is that better?
That's so much better.
Okay,
thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Keep that. Yeah.
So I tend to ask, wonder about how we compare student success and determine student success,
mm-hmm.
especially when I believe a previous caller mentioned it. When we compare white and black students, and what might we be saying when we do that?
Mm-hmm.
So if we say that, are we saying that whiteness is the norm for all others to somehow live up to or to come to? When we find that, for example, we have many Asian and immigrant African students in many cases, doing better than white students. So
mm-hmm.
if we're going to pick, for example, who's doing the best in certain areas, wouldn't that change, let's say, you know, but that's not really happening. So I'm wondering how can we start rethinking what we're saying when we're not saying, when we start comparing these races, and then what else, how else could we start thinking about how to measure success? Your previous caller said there's no way a teacher can be in classrooms and uncaring. That's completely possible. It happens every day.
Well, I think I agree. I know what you're talking about, but I think his point was nobody goes into teaching saying, and I'm going to be a crummy teacher just because I can. I think everybody goes into it. Most people go into it thinking they want to be a good teacher.
Yeah, I think maybe the challenge, I wonder, is how they determine good teachers.
Right.
So, for example, if we have a number of, and this is just seeing from my experience as an educator, seeing certain demographics of students, let's say white teachers, mm-hmm. wanting to go into urban schools and not realizing that they are coming with a very paternalistic, I'm coming to save these students kind of freedom riders, you know, dangerous minds type way of going about it. And it's like that mindset is doing a disservice to these students because you're coming in assuming that you're able to be a savior and you don't know any of these students.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been taught to continue to compare these black students basically to you as a white person. And I think that mindset is not being challenged and it continues to be recycled in, like you said, the dispatch and other education forums. And I'm wondering when will we start to kind of challenge that way of thinking and challenge teachers and really ask them, how are you trying to be helpful teacher?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's happening. Rare. I don't think that's happening at all, or maybe not that much. So we're not really looking at that.
What about the dearth of particularly male African-American, black male teachers in the public schools?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't know if there's like an easy answer. We can look at how many black men are interested in going into education, period.
Right.
You know, how many men, really, period.
Because that's it's a lower paying field, all things right. being equal.
Right. It's a lower paying field. I mean, it's challenging to see men, period, kind of going into education. But then, you know, that's a good question. But I can't say that, if we have more black men in urban schools, then it's going to be like a magic cure-all. I don't think that's going to happen either. But I do think traditional education has to be flipped upside down for different groups of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't expect, for example, we had a teacher who assumed that these particular families didn't care about their children. They didn't come to school. They didn't come to parent-teacher conferences. Mm-hmm. The student was going from house to house to house. And they're like, they don't care. Well, like your caller said before, his parents have many jobs. What happens if there's only one parent? Or parents aren't able to take their children to their job. Or they just can't come to the school.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they're not educated. And if they're going from house to house, is that because somebody doesn't care about them? Or is it more of a communal way of rearing children,
mm-hmm.
which happens often in African-American and Native communities? With some of that conversation came up when Michelle Obama's mother was in the White House. There's an intergenerational rearing of children that happens in many multicultural communities, which we don't really think about. And so instead of going and judging and assuming, it's the parents' fault, there's a lot of moving parts, which it's hard for a teacher who's doing a lot to kind of find out those moving parts, but I feel like that has to be a part of teacher education as well. And so when are we going to start looking at how are these teachers being prepared to deal with demographics that they don't normally interact with?
All good points. It's complicated. Don't you hate it? It's complicated. It is complicated. This one story we've talked about, a lot of different people have called in, headlines, wide racial gap persists in education testing. It's complicated. There's not even a subhead to that. It's just that.
Yeah.
It's got to be more complicated than that, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. It's very, I think we have to start asking some critical questions, not only as parents, and as commentators like yourself, but also as teachers and teacher educators, what aren't we looking at?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we not place blame, but start thinking about what aren't we thinking about?
Okay. All right, Melissa. Thanks a lot. That was good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye. Oops, I just hung up on the wrong person. I'm sorry about that. Keith in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Keith.
I'm on the air.
Great.
Great. Listen, I'm not from the United States.
Okay.
I came here and I saw your educational system. And I'm going to say this, that it doesn't matter whether you're white, black, Indian descent, come from a foreign country like myself, what it requires here in the United States, parental involvement.
Mm-hmm.
It is strictly parental involvement. When I went to the schools and I came in the United States and I looked around, I saw what was being taught. I decided when my kids come home from school, I will ensure that they know what they learned in school. And that's what I did. Both my sons are successful. I'm from the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
I have an interracial marriage, and I ensured that my sons learned. I left it up to no one but myself and my wife. And they're both successful right now.
How much do you
think?
I was going to ask you, how much do you think your ability to do that? Because you made an investment of time and energy there by doing that, however you achieved it. how much do you think that that has to do with the fact that you're a two-parent family, that they're not to pass judgment on single-parent families, point being the economics of it all, that, you know, we were just talking, some people work three jobs just to keep food on the table these days.
Well, you know, that is a social
A lot
problem
of people
here.
Do, as a matter of fact.
Exactly. That is a social problem here in the United States. However, ensuring that you have, as you say, quality time with your children is very, very important. Another thing is that you consistently have to set the example. So that means that when you come home and it has been a busy day and your kids have to do homework, you sit at the table, read your newspaper, ensure your kids do the homework. You review their homework.
Mm-hmm.
You get them interested in things that are worthwhile. Museums, take the time out on a Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Show them those things. And it'll make a world of difference. The child learns from its parent. A teacher in school has specific time to depend on and ensure that the kids in school learn. But once they leave that classroom,
mm-hmm.
it depends on the parent
right.
to ensure.
A lot of people agree with you, that's for sure.
That child knows what he learned in school. Because that teacher has 20 to 30 kids in the classroom, there is no way she can spend or he can spend specific time or dedicated time on your child.
Mm-hmm.
You, as the parent, have to do it. And it doesn't matter if you're poor or if you're rich.
Mm-hmm.
The exact same thing occurs.
Has to happen.
It has to happen.
Okay.
You know, I often talk to individuals, and they said, oh, my kid this, my kid that. I have an uncle in New York who raised his kids in the Bronx. One is a doctor today, one is a lawyer, and one is a teacher. Now, if the Bronx is not difficult, then where else in the United States is difficult?
Hmm.
Of course he worked. His wife didn't work. She stayed at home.
Hmm.
I also have examples of friends with single parents who the mother has worked, the child comes home, or the children come home, and she, tired as a laborer, spent the time with them.
Mm-hmm.
They're all successful. Spend the time with your kid.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be able even to read in order to do that.
Okay.
Spend the time with your kids. The teacher at school does not have the time to take care of your kid individually.
Okay.
That's what I'd like to tell America.
All right. Well, Keith, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Take care. Brian in Columbus, we're running out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in. How you doing? Hi, Brian.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. The phone went blank.
That's okay.
I just wanted to speak briefly to the education discussion that we're having. It's, the previous callers have all had various valid points and so forth, but it seems to me that everybody is missing the particulars of the headline, and that is that all of these students in question have the same socioeconomic opportunities and the same educational opportunities in that they're in the same districts and buildings. And I think, and I know this will sound racist, and it certainly isn't intended to, but at some point people, whoever they are, must take responsibility individually, whether they succeed or fail. And the idea that white kids can't succeed with black teachers and vice versa, I think is patently false. I graduated in 1981 in a desegregated Columbus public school,
mm-hmm.
and had black male and female teachers and got A's in all of those classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no sense that they didn't have my best interest educationally in mind. And again, I just think, you know, everybody continues to look for something to blame it on. And I think once we get out of school, we can't say that we succeed or fail because of our race. We have to take personal responsibility for ourselves. And I guess that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Looks like we're just about out of time. Enjoyed the conversation today. As usual, gravitated toward the educational piece. Means a lot of people out there care a lot about that issue, and it was great to hear your comments and get your points of view on it. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.